Welcome to episode 182 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, and Jen. This week, we read Peter Panzerfaust, The Great Escape by Curtis J. Leeb. And now, the cast begins.
Andy, some guy messaged me on eBay and basically said, "Your reserve price is too high, I can't afford that." It's like, tough shit.
Good for you.
Leave me alone.
Been on somebody else's auction then.
See, here's the thing though. Mine is the only one on eBay.
Well then, it seems like your reserve price might not be high enough.
I'm trying to sell a HeroClix figure.
Yeah.
It's an Iron Man chase piece. It's the Iron Pharaoh.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I haven't used it in a while, so I figured and it's very expensive on eBay. Well, mine's the only one. The last one that sold was on Sunday. And it sold for $83.
Holy shit. Yeah, sell that motherfucker.
Well, the reason is because it's been in the top 10 of like the last three ROC events and the national championship at Origins. So everybody wants it because it's a meta piece. And so I decided to put mine up. And I put it up on Monday, and right now it's at $36 and it still has 4 days to go.
Plus, if you sell it, then you could buy another Tantive. You can buy, David, you can buy another Tantive. You can mod the second one. You can, like, put LEDs in the engine bay.
Stop talking to me, please.
Like, you know how the engines have, like, black? You could put, like, little LEDs in each of them and then have a button to turn it on, and you can give it, like, a special paint job. I want to get a second one to do these things.
Andy, somebody posted on Reddit their pictures of their modified light-up Tantive.
Oh, they're so sick, aren't they?
I just want to sell my Iron Man. And my reserve is $55.
Okay, if the other one went for $80, then that's not too bad.
No, that's what I told the guy. I shouldn't even have replied.
No.
I don't know what I was thinking.
It's probably just some kid who's, like, hoping that, you know, you'll give him what he wants.
You should sell him to get a job, hippie.
Yeah.
Get a job that pays better than shit.
Get off your lawn.
Yes, get off of my lawn.
No, get on my lawn with a lawnmower for the next 2 months. Then maybe
they'll
think about it.
No, because then I would just... No. Should we talk about Peter Pan?
Yeah, Peter Panzerfaust.
Panzerfaust.
What's a good Peter Pan-related word?
I don't know. I'm ready if you guys are, though.
Did you have a word chosen?
Yeah, kinda.
Okay.
Okay.
All right, everybody. Welcome to another tank-punching episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And this week we read Peter Panzerfaust, The Great Escape, collecting issues 1-5 of Peter Panzerfaust, written by Curtis J. Weeb, with art by Tyler Jenkins. He's got to hate that video.
I feel like everyone with that last name should legally change their last name to Jenkins.
Hey, would Jenkins be an okay first name?
Yeah, why not?
Sure.
Oh my god.
Okay. Are you going to name your child Jenkins?
We've been trying to think of boy names, and I don't think my wife has ever seen that video. And I'm really hoping, she's asleep right now, she just won't hear this, maybe I can sell her on naming our kid Leroy Jenkins.
Okay, let me tell you this.
Andy. You are a bad man.
No, here's the thing.
Let me give you a piece of advice as somebody who's named two children. Don't tell her yet. You have to wait.
Okay.
Because I wanted my daughter to be named... Okay, comic book fans out there, you will probably get this reference. I wanted to name my daughter Dinah Laurel Montgomery.
Which would be fucking sick.
Okay.
And my wife was on board with Dinah until one of her friends pointed out to her that Dinah rhymes with vagina.
No, it doesn't.
Well, it's close enough that name was then vetoed.
Aww.
Now, I love my daughter, and her name is fine. I'm just... It's like one of those situations, like, what could have been?
Yeah, you were right there.
It was so close, and then...
No,
anyways.
We've learned from that mistake. We have three or four girls' names, actually.
Keep it a
in
secret.
The bank, and we're not telling anybody. We're just
Don't.
Not. We're not.
Don't.
But the boy's name is a little bit tougher. And that way, if we name it Lee, I could say, this is my son, Leroy Jenkins.
Wow, we went off topic quick.
But we went off topic because this guy, this name for a comic is amazing. I have to say, Peter Panzerfaust, I love, I wanted to get into names a little bit because I love the crafting of that name. Because I feel like it's hard to come up with a good name. It really is. And you can do things to make it easier, like fall upon alliteration, which is what Superman's creators did with Lana Lang and Lois Lane.
Oh, there's some. It's all over comics.
Yeah, Miles Morales. I mean, but aside
Peter from that, Parker.
Yeah, it's hard to think of a good name, and Peter Panzerfaust does the alliteration thing too. But there's also like three or four things going on in this name, right? Because this is a really like magical, stay young forever kind of story, which is Peter Pan. Peter
it
Panzerfaust.
Is Peter Pan. It's right? Peter. It is Peter Pan.
Yeah. This is. But then also, because it's World War II and they're fighting the Germans, Peter Panzerfaust. Panzerfaust translates into tank puncher.
It was the name of the RPG. It was the RPG,
right? Yeah. But also, like, it's a tank puncher and he's fighting Germans. And, like, aside from those two levels, those are great. But he's an American guy, claims to be American anyway. He's fighting against the Germans, but for some reason he has an incredibly German last name. So,
but
there's opportunity.
Wait. His last name is not Panzerfaust.
No, what is it?
We are never given.
No, I don't care. His last name is actually Panzerfaust.
No. Panzerfaust is the title of the book.
No, that's
so
bullshit.
So it's like his epithet then? Like
no one ever
Hector Breaker
no
of
one
horses?
In the story refers to him as Peter Panzerfaust.
Not yet. I mean, there's 19 issues. We only read 5.
I'm just saying,
I really really want his last name to actually be Panzerfaust.
Yeah, I want this. I mean, it's alliterative and topical.
And sick.
It is a cool name, but I feel like you're getting ahead of yourself.
My firstborn son, Panzerfaust Jebbins.
Oh my god.
I have to say it like that every time.
The other thing we were looking up is there's like a giant list of every like sci-fi name ever in television and movies. And we were scrolling through the Bs and apparently there was some character named Blood Axe. I was like, can we please name my kid Blood Axe Weiglin?
No, you gotta make it like German Weiglin.
You can have Panzerfaust Jebbins and I'll have Blood Axe Weiglin.
Well, what's the German word for axe?
Oh, fuck, I actually don't know that one.
Because you could just make it Blood something.
Blood Axe.
Well, anyways.
I don't think that would roll well with an Indian accent.
I think a lot of our listeners have stopped the episode by now.
So, yeah, this is Peter Pan retold in World War II setting.
Yes. Yeah. So, I think, what's interesting is as a kid, I never really liked Peter Pan that much, except for Hook. The movie Hook.
Because Hook had fucking
Rufio.
Yeah, and Rufio was sick.
But here's the thing. When I was reading this, it took me a while to realize that it was a Peter Pan story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And the point where it made the connection was when Wendy, John, and Michael appeared.
Yeah.
And they were all named at the same time. And then I was like, oh, Peter Panzerfaust. And then I could not help but see all the Peter Pan references. And I think I think they meet Wendy in like issue 3 or something.
Yeah.
That's when I got it. When she's like, I'm Wendy Darling, because nobody has that name except the Peter Pan girl.
Is her last name Darling in Peter Pan?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they're the Darlings.
Ah.
I was not aware.
See, it hit me when Gilbert said something like it seems like in those days we didn't age. Or he says something like that, like that we were frozen in time. He mentioned something about not aging. I'm like, oh shit, yeah, huh?
Even at that point, it didn't occur to me.
Yeah, because some people do talk about that time in their lives like that. I mean, not necessarily about war, but people talk about like their late teens, early 20s as like we felt invincible. We did all kinds of crazy shit. Like it felt like we could live forever. Like people make those statements about that age.
Well, yeah. See, like I mean. I feel like the story is not necessarily about World War II. It's just this time in these kids' lives just happens to be in World War II in France.
Mm-hmm. Oh, see, but that we can't. For me, the most important thing about this book is that it is set in World War II.
No, I'm not. I'm not trying to diminish that at all.
Yeah, the setting's relevant, but it's a personal story. It's about how they survive, not about like. The overarching idea or impact of the war. It's how they survived the war.
And the story is not going to be about how they won World War II or something, you know.
Single-handedly.
Yeah. And we know that. And so that's why I don't think that this is... Like, somebody in the notes mentioned Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
And I think there are some... You can draw some correlations between the two. But Inglourious Basterds is like a... is a retelling of World War II's history.
It changed the way things went.
Right. And so that's fine. Like, but this is not like that. We already know what's going to happen with the war. There's no surprises there. The surprise and the twists and turns in this story will be within the lives of these people. And, you know, I feel like I can safely assume that in the next issue, we're going to probably hear Lucien's story.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it will be Peter's story told from Lucien's perspective to a certain degree.
Wait, I mean, Lucien also, or Julian?
I think Lucien is going to be the next one. Whoever the curly-haired one is.
Oh, that's Julian. Lucien is the little one who died before the story even started.
Hold on just a second. What was the captain's name? The German captain at the scouting?
Oh, we don't get his name, but... I bought the trade from Comixology, and they have, like, extras in the back, and there's a cover with him on it that's going to be part of Volume 2, and he's exactly who you think he's going to be in.
He is Captain Hook, right?
Yeah. The cover...
Because his hand gets cut off and everything.
Well, the teaser picture that I think is going to end up being I don't know if it's going to be a cover, but it's a teaser for the comic, and it has him with a hook for
sick.
His left hand.
So sick.
I'm trying to remember. Are you sure it wasn't? It was. I mean, I
because they call him. I'm pretty sure they say his name.
I don't. Maybe they didn't. Oh yeah, you're right, Jen. It was Julian.
Okay.
Julien,
I guess. My French is all borked.
I don't know. I got
I feel
them
like
confused.
We get Hook's name somewhere in there, too, where he says, like, I'm Captain such and such.
Oh, Captain Hocken.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, that is German for Hook.
Well, there you go.
So his name is literally Captain Hook.
Well, I mean, our hero's name is literally Peter Pan.
Like,
well, it's Peter.
Okay, I think I finally figured out why I don't remember characters' names very well, because I don't actually read them, apparently. Because I know Hocken is Hook in German, and if I was actually reading people's names, I would have read Captain Hook and been like, what the fuck, and learned it, and figured it out there. I think I figured it out, like, an issue after that. Sorry, personal note. How the fuck do I just miss that? Who the hell is named Captain Hook, except for Captain fucking Hook?
Well, we don't see his hand get cut off, but Peter stabs it and then, like, cuts it.
Slices it open.
Between his index and middle finger.
Yeah. I have to believe he's going to get a hook, though. This isn't the kind of one that would... I don't believe... The tone of this book doesn't make me think that, like, they're just going to amputate, like, his bottom two or three fingers and have the other ones curled like a hook or something stupid like that.
Well, the teaser in my trade is an actual hook, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Which is good. I think it's good that they're doing it for realsies without sticking exactly to what the story is. Because I think, I don't know.
Doesn't he lose it in a fight with Peter Pan?
Yeah.
Yeah, and he loses
no,
it.
No, doesn't it get bitten off by the alligator?
Yeah, that's right. It's the alligator.
Ooh. Crocodile.
Crocodile, yeah, you're right. Crocodile.
Never smile at a crocodile.
When's the crocodile going to show up?
Yeah, who will play role of crocodile? But,
maybe it'll be a French bulldog or something.
I really like that they are taking some things, like, kind of just straight from the Peter Pan narrative, but they're not slathering it on too heavy. I think it's a good balance in this, like...
Well, I mean, it's right there. It's, like, right there in the reader's face, and and none of us got it right away.
Well, that's why I think the setting is the most important thing about this, because this kind of story, right, like... This is really, the setting to me is really important, because when you get a story that has anybody under the age of, like, 40 in a war setting, the story is almost invariably about how we're sending children, and, oh, these people, they look so young, they're just kids, we're sending kids off to war, and they're wasting their lives before they reach their full potential, and that's always, like, some kind of poignant commentary about why war is terrible. But this... They're drawn so young, and they have the bodies of older people, but the faces of younger boys, and that really works for the aesthetic, for the Peter Pan kind of thing. But it also it changes the entire feel of what you expect the commentary of the comic to be. Like, I went into this expecting because I didn't know it was Peter Pan. I didn't do any research before I read this, and honestly, I didn't really do much after. But like. I was reading this, I was expecting that to come up. I was expecting it so hard. And then there's all this, like, magical whimsy in what they're doing. like Peter Pan even, or Peter even, like, mentions that they jump with magic from the one building to the other. Like, they ask him, how can we possibly make the jump? And he says, magic. And it's like, it's so opposite of what you're expecting for this setting. There's nothing magical about World War II.
Well, I think you're onto something, definitely, Andy. Because, like you said, a lot of stories about young people in war is about how they're, like, Saving Private Ryan, for example. You know, it's these young people trying to save another young man in the war, and it kind of forces them to grow up. But this is the exact opposite. They're trying to escape the war and maintain their childhood innocence, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe not innocence, but they're trying to maintain, you know, the child, their youthful qualities.
Yeah, like, for instance, they don't want to kill people.
Yeah, that's right. They keep, like, knocking people out and just leaving. How does he phrase it? Leave them to their fate?
Yeah, I mean, the only person that we see for sure kill somebody is Felix, and he, like, dies immediately.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that that's a consequence of killing somebody in this world, but he loses his innocence, and he
grows up.
Yeah, then he grows up and dies, I guess you could say.
Or he does metaphorically an adult action, dies.
And he gets an adult
consequence. Oh, no, wait, he doesn't die.
Yeah, they see him in Paris, and I think
He's in chains and getting locked away, but, like, that's the way I see it. He does an adult action, and he gets an adult consequence.
Yeah, whereas the rest of them, like, we see them right before, you know, partying, playing cards. They're kind of having a really, like, they're experiencing escapism in, like, the most true way that they can by, like, just ignoring that the war is happening on their doorstep until it finally comes to them. And they maintain, you know, their childish activities. Whereas, you know, who knows what he's been through, what Felix has had to go through to be captured by the Germans and then march to Paris.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because even though they get out of the farm and then they get to Paris and they continue just ignoring it until the last possible moment when the Germans are marching through the city.
And they don't take a stand until they see how their friend has been affected by by this adult conflict.
Yeah,
and they decide to take a stand, but I don't think it's not in the same way that Felix did, where they're trying to take they're doing an adult action or an adult act. I feel like it's safe to assume that they're going to take on the conflict in the manner that we see in this story, like, particularly when they try to steal the truck from the scouting party and when they, you know, they decide to escape from the farmhouse instead of fighting.
Yeah. Well, I think at the end of the story, when they decide that they're going to try and fight for Felix to get him back, you know, I'm assuming that's what they're going to do. Even then, I feel like that's not an adult action. I mean, that's something you do if you're insane at this point. You're in Paris, you're a bunch of kids, and the Germans are marching through the street with tanks, and they have your friend.
Yeah, it's certainly not, like, a reason, maybe not. It's not a rational action.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe I'm being cynical, but I think Peter Pan, the story, is a cynical commentary on adulthood, and I think holding with that, the adult thing to do in that situation would be like, oh, shit, they have Felix, we better get the fuck out of here. Like, maybe I'm being cynical, and maybe I'm buying into the classical commentary that is Peter Pan, but I don't know, like, I see them doing that, and I'm like, that is that same feeling that Gilbert describes in the framed narrative of, like, being chased by a dog. How it's exciting and scary all at the same time.
Hmm. You know, it's interesting, like, this is we all agree that this is kind of a retelling of Peter Pan, but for the life of me, I can't remember how Peter Pan ends, and I'm trying to figure out how this story is going to go based on what I know about Peter Pan, but I can't remember what happens in Peter Pan. I can remember what happens in Hook, but not the actual story.
I know, Peter. I remember Hook so much better than I remember Peter Pan.
Because I think in Hook, Robin Williams was Peter Pan, right? And he went back after he'd left Neverland to be an adult.
But he had forgotten who he was.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff.
And clearly that's not the case here. So I'm like trying to remember the Disney version. I can't remember that. Or the real story of Peter Pan. So.
Well, hey, now you got a new movie to watch with your son. Pop on Peter Pan. Refresh yourself.
But, so, I mean, we think that the story is, I don't know, we kind of agree about, like, what the setting and stuff is, but do you think it works as a story about childhood? I mean, is it a story about childhood? Is it a story about war? Is it some kind of mix of it? And do you think it works as a comic?
I think it's really hard to evaluate as a comic because this has been like an entirely expository trade. But I really do think that it works as a mix of commentary on, you know, childhood war, what it is to grow up, and what it is to grow up in a situation that's so beyond your control that it forces you to make adult choices. And we already see that, you know, as you guys said, like, these guys have to face consequences when they make adult, or when they choose adult actions. But, I don't know, I think it works really well. Just, it feels like a very human story. Like, it's not unbelievable.
I feel like the using Peter Pan is a very interesting choice, because, you know, we see retellings of classic stories all the time. Sometimes they're super obvious, and sometimes they're framed differently. But I feel like Peter Pan's one of those stories that it doesn't get the same kind of attention as other stuff. So
yeah, it's not something that gets retold very often in any sort of way.
Because it's about children, and I think it's hard to tell a story with a lot of weight in a story with a story about children. Peter Pan is a story about children living in such a way that they don't have to grow up. And like I said earlier, and like Jen mentioned, oftentimes when we see young people in war, it's a situation where they're forced to grow up. But here, I think they're going to, I mean, if it's anything like other Peter Pan stories, they're going to be doing everything they can not to grow up, right? Or they're not, or it's as a byproduct of the choices they make, they won't grow up.
I think it's more that second one, as a byproduct of their actions. Because I for me, because Jen's right, it's hard to talk about, not just because it's expository, but it's hard to talk about the quality of this comic because the story isn't Curtis J. Weebs. The story is Peter Pan. He's telling it, and, you know, there's a lot of nuances, of course, that he adds. I feel like the thing that we might want to evaluate the most is the decision to pick World War II. And this is where, like, they're not growing up not because they don't want to grow up. They're not growing up because they want to ignore the war. They don't want to be in this war. They want nothing to do with this war. And for most of them, this war has nothing to do with them, other than the fact that they live there. And so they're just trying to avoid the war in the way that most people, in the way that children think of avoiding growing up.
And except for Peter.
Except for Peter, who embraces it. Well, not necessarily embraces it, but he finds himself in his element.
I don't think he's...
Embracing was a bad word. He's not embracing the war.
No, I think embracing is okay. I think the misstep is that he's embracing the war. He's not embracing the war. He's making the most of his situation based on the kind of person he is. I mean, he clearly likes adventure.
Well, he's like Peter Pan. You know, he goes into danger for the fun of it because it's a thrill. And he is capable, so he has kind of this grandiose sense that he can keep the others around him safe. So he doesn't, you know, he doesn't feel bad about dragging the others into this. And for him, the war is a childish adventure. It's a place where it's not necessarily life and death. And he does understand people die, but at the same time, he seems to kind of move on from it more quickly or more hopefully than some of the others. He clings to this innocence when he's, you know, chasing that adventure, whereas I don't think the others can. You know, the whole time they're like, I don't know if we want to follow this guy. It could be dangerous. We could get killed. And they're thinking more adult thoughts, whereas a child, you know, children do tend to put themselves recklessly in danger because they don't understand, right? So
I think Peter understands what's happening, though.
He understands, but he's also... I won't say, like, he doesn't... He certainly cares. He was really you like that scene with him and Wendy in the hotel room, and
yeah.
Gilbert says, like, he never talked to me about that. Like, he was really upset by the one boy dying. On the other hand, he is the one who tells Gilbert, oh, you know, Felix is a fighter. He's still alive, and I know it. Mm. He has a lot more hope than the others.
I think there's even a point in there where he tells them not, he says something along the lines of not giving up hope.
Yeah.
I think it might be that same scene, actually, that you're talking about.
So that's the one half that's different, right? Like, the obvious difference of being in the war and how that's a little bit twisted in the choice of setting and time and place. The other half, for me, that's a little bit twisted is Gilbert in the future. I don't know anybody who's been in a war who talks about being in a war the way he does. He talks about it like it was some magical time and it was a grand adventure. And that's not... I don't think that's what war is. And I think the use of the frame narrative here, aside from being a handy way to tell a story easily, it also, it makes me see a commentary in here about PTSD, about how he's willingly shutting things out of his mind and his memory, and remembering them in this whimsical way of, like, we were young and it was a grand adventure and all these kinds of things.
But we don't know that it wasn't that way from his perspective.
Yeah, I mean, it might have been. But what really makes me think that is that scene when the shell hits the house and Elaine is in it. And you see the house getting blown up and then there's his face in the foreground. And it's like, that guy, however old he is, he's still living in that moment. He hasn't grown past it. He hasn't grown up from that moment. That's where he is. He's held on to it his entire life, and that's, like, he lives there. That's where he chooses to exist. And, like, that is the it's the non-willful disability to grow beyond it. It's like, it's Peter Pan not wanting to be Peter Pan in this, like, weird, sort of twisted kind of way. And maybe I'm probably reading way too much into this. I really, really probably am.
Hey, that's okay. That's what we do. That's what our podcast is about.
It pretty much is, isn't it? That's what we should call it. The Read Too Much Into the Comic Book Cast. But, like, I don't know. I see something in here about PTSD, about people not being able to grow beyond these things that have happened to them and how they stay with them their entire lives. And I don't know how it affects the other people in the story, because all we get is Gilbert. And I get the kind of feeling that maybe the frame narrative is going to change in the next trade to maybe another person. I have no idea. That's just kind of like, it seemed like they wrapped up the discussion with Gilbert. What was the guy's name? The guy who was interviewing him.
John Parsons.
Is that a Peter Pan thing at all?
I don't know.
I have to look that up. But it seemed like they were done with their discussion. And if, like, he's, like, as if Parsons trying to write a story about their adventure.
You know what I thought is that he is Peter's son or something. Or okay. Peter and Wendy's son, maybe.
So, I don't know how this is going to end, but do you want me to tell you how Peter Pan the play or later book ended?
Yeah.
I don't remember the Disney movie, but this was, like, one of my favorite books as a kid. So, it basically plays out, I think, like the Disney movie, and then at the end, Wendy realizes she has to go back home to her mother, mm-hmm. because I guess she knows that her mother is, like, really sad that she's gone or something, or she suspects it, and then the mom, Mrs. Darling, ends up adopting the Lost Boys, and she offers to take in Peter, and I think he refuses because he doesn't want to grow up, and he feels like having a parent would force him to grow up, so he goes his own merry way, and he promises Wendy that he'll, you know, come back and visit her, and I think it ends with her, you know, saying, oh, I really hope he comes back, but it's ambiguous. And I could see this ending the same way, because we do see the Lost Boys growing up, at least Gilbert, mm-hmm. or Toodles, as he's later known. you know, he turns into an older man, so makes you wonder what happens to the others. And I definitely see Wendy growing up. She's already stated that she's tried to stay a child, and that didn't work for her. So we know she's kind of that opposing force in this comic. The force of adulthood, of sense, of despair, actually. She's, like, way sadder than anyone else. And the orphans, have lost a lot of people in their lives.
You know what I just got? Lost Boys. Orphans. Oh my god.
Isn't there somewhere, I think there's somewhere in the comic where they refer to themselves as being lost.
I think you're right.
Yeah, they might. I think so.
How did I know? Oh god, it's like, oh, they're lost. Oh. That's cool. Sorry, you made a really deep statement, and I just, like, steamrolled over with my dumbness. Yeah, well, she is, like, really resistant to the growing up, and she, like, to the point that she's keeping her brothers with her, you know, like, she's trying to protect them in an almost motherly kind of way when she, no, not motherly, that's wrong.
She is, though. I mean, the way she holds Michael, it's,
yeah.
You know, I think she resisted growing up and realized she couldn't. Like, she even says, like, it's a foolish dream that she and her friends, you know, would think that. And it was stupid. And now we see her being the mother figure. So, and you know, she's the worrier. Like,
yeah.
Everyone else is like, I don't know if I want to go with Peter. We're going to die. But she's the one who says, like, Michael, you have to stay close. John, don't do this. You know, she puts her fears into wanting other people to do things rather than just, like, saying, I'm afraid, like the others have.
Well, I think she probably she certainly feels responsible for them to a certain degree.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hmm. Well, she even says, there's a point where she's telling Peter about her past where she says she's stuck in Neverland, which makes me think that she, I don't know, it sounds like she almost wants to grow up.
Or at least that she's the only person who has accepted the inevitability of it.
Mm-hmm.
I think she's also the only person who has accepted this war and what it truly means for all of them.
I mean, we get the strong impression she just wants to go back to England and has no desire to, like, hijack German cars or bludgeon officers, right? And the others, like, might be more hesitant, except for Gilbert, who's going to clearly blindly follow Peter, like, yeah, anywhere, right? But the others, I don't know, like, that's the thing. Gilbert frames it as this grand adventure, and I think that his view of Peter colors our view, you know, because it's a frame narrative. We're just getting his story. So what's it going to be like if it shifts? Like, if we get Julian Curly telling us the next trade, you know, is he, I don't think he has the same sense of respect for Peter. Are we going to see a much darker comic, or
with Peter, like, bullying them into doing things they don't want to do?
Yeah, like, who is going
I'm
to blame Peter?
I'm the one with
Peter?
The gun, damn it.
You know someone's going to end up blaming Peter for the deaths of their friends somewhere along the way. Like I don't know. You can kind of, I get the sense that that could happen because he was the one who pressured them to leave Calais to, you know, to go out with him instead of staying where they knew.
Yeah, I mean, they're...
Well, one could argue that the choice they made was better than the alternative, because we don't know for sure that they would be safe there.
And, like, there is something, like, almost objectively charming about Peter. Like, him and his grand entrances. And I know we're getting the frame narrative and his grand entrances and all, but he's also, like, you have to. You have to sympathize with a guy looking for his Tinkerbell. You have to. He's,
oh my god, Belle is Tinkerbell!
He's out searching the countryside for this woman that he met once that he just wants to be with again. And, like,
do you think, I my guess is that it's his mom.
That's what I thought it was. Because he pulls out the locket when he shows the picture of his dad to Gilbert, right?
Yeah, so I didn't think it was his mom initially. It wasn't until the conversation with Gilbert about his father that I thought I figured Belle might be his mother.
I mean, but Tinkerbell, the name makes so much sense.
Yeah, I didn't catch that until you just mentioned it.
I didn't catch it until, like, you guys were talking, and I was like, holy shit! Like, as you guys talk, I think I get more holy shit moments.
Did you pick up, it was, like, the cover of issue 2 or 3, there was an alternate cover in the trade that had a woman who probably is Tinkerbell. She was, like, in a green, torn-up army dress with,
oh, yeah.
Like, a bandolier of ammo around her, and...
Yeah.
You know, I
bet
thought,
she's Tinkerbell.
You know, I thought it was just, like, a badass...
badass Wendy.
Yeah. But that makes a whole lot more sense.
Yeah, this girl was blonde, and Wendy is a brunette, right? So.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
all women look the same.
True story.
You look just like her, Jen.
Yeah, we're sneaky like that, women.
Changing your hair colors and shit all the time. How are we supposed to tell you guys apart? You ladies apart.
It's like Scarlett Johansson and Lucy.
I want to see that movie.
Me too. Anyway.
Nice pull.
Yeah, I think you're I think you're probably right about that, Jen. I bet if I go back and look at the locket, she probably looks like her too.
I think it is, but it's actually kind of hard to tell. Cuz you know, one's in color, the other's black and white, and it's smaller.
It can't be his mother though.
Why?
Well, cuz if the OG Peter Pan story is him refusing a parent because he thinks it would make him grow up. Like, Peter Pan never had parents, did he?
But why does this have to be... It doesn't have to follow the same story.
Yeah, that's true. Oh, that makes me want to keep reading it to figure out how the intersection of setting and story changed the reading of Peter Pan.
Certainly this is not going to be the exact telling of Peter Pan.
It already isn't.
We're not going to get... Oh, I wonder if we're going to get Princess Tiger Lily and who the heck that could be.
The Queen of England.
Maybe that's when they go to, like, the Pacific Theater and... I don't know.
They meet a geisha. So, what were your guys' favorite scenes in this book? Or, like, favorite moments?
See, I felt like I had an answer for you before, but so much has been revealed in our discussion, as is typical with our discussions lately, that it's hard to choose now.
I have one.
Go.
The one panel where where Gilbert sees Elaine in the window right before the shell drops.
Oh, that's like a soul-crushing panel.
Yeah. And then, like, the way he yells his friend's name, it's like, you can hear it in your soul. It's so sad.
Wait, hold on a second. Was that Elaine or Lucien?
Elaine. Lucien's dead farmhouse before the start of the story.
Okay. Yeah. You're right. Yeah. He died in the orphanage. Yeah.
It's just, oh, that is the saddest scene, and I don't like that it's sad, but I think it was a really well-done sad scene.
Yeah, and I have two, and one of them is the full page after that with the shell hitting the farmhouse and the old man Gilbert in the foreground. Like, for me, that's that's it. That's it right there. That is this story in that page. That and Peter Panzerfaust's entrance.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, that guy is fucking cool. You just, like, know it looking at him. Like, that guy is awesome. And that's good art, to convey that just by looking at the guy. Like, that guy's cool. I want to hang out with him. All right, David, do we still have time for you?
Oh, I think to find one?
Yeah.
Nah, it's hard. Gotta say, like, I agree with you guys. I mean,
my favorite line as well is when... It's from a text box, and it's Gilbert saying, I wondered if the other side offered peace, the other side being after death. Like, I wondered if the other side offered peace, something Lucien was enjoying while the rest of us fought to live. And it's like, oh, that's a beautiful poetic line.
Well, that's where they're being pulled out of the harbor, right?
Yeah. Like, I had to write that line down just because it's beautiful.
Man, this is such a sad story.
Going off of what you, sorry, Andy.
Yeah. Do you want to talk or should I?
No, go.
Did you interrupt you? So, you know, we talk about how sad this story is. Do you think that the same type of, if we had the same level of discussion about Peter Pan, would we get the same type of emotion? Maybe not the same type of emotion, but the same reaction, like sadness to the story?
I think the book, or
is it a byproduct of the setting?
I think it's part of the original Peter Pan, like, book or play. I don't think the Disney movie conveys that sadness, but Disney movies are not made to convey sadness. No. I think that there's something sad about clinging to childhood like that, and then being forced to grow up like Wendy is and the Lost Boys are, and I don't know, like, the ambiguity of hope at the very end, not knowing if that idea that clings to youth is ever going to come back to you. I sound like someone having, like, a midlife crisis right now. But no, I think it's a bittersweet story. And I think that's why it's still around, because it's not just, like, kids being dumb with pirates. It's a reflection on what it is to grow up and how that can be a very joyful thing, but also a sad or even sometimes, for some people, traumatic thing.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it fits in with this setting well, because the setting, I think, to modern readers today is a good way to evoke the same, like, danger that something like pirates might have evoked when, you know, this was originally written in the early, I don't know, 1900s? Like,
yeah, I think you're right. I mean, pirates are almost a fantasy trope nowadays. I mean, we have piracy in the world, but it's not like Captain Hook type or like Jack Sparrow type of pirates, you know? It's, so I think you're right. This is, I'm starting to like the setting more, and I'm getting more convinced that it's a good backdrop for this story. Because, I mean, I mentioned before, I'm going to say something again that I said already. You know, this is about them trying to, they're like holding on to their childhood in this setting, but I think it's actually more of like their youth and the war like grinding against each other. Like that's part of the conflict. It's the overarching conflict is these two forces trying to push themselves onto the other, right? They're trying to maintain their innocence, whereas the war, you know, they can't escape it. They tried to get out of Calais, and they went to the farmhouse, and they found a respite from the war. And then the war came to them, so they decided to go to Paris, where they again find a respite from the war. And then the war follows them there. They're trying to escape this. They're trying to escape adulthood, just like Peter Pan and the Lost Boys do by going to Neverland, right?
Makes sense. It was really smart. I had nothing to add.
But that's exactly why I think this discussion gets deeper, because of the setting. Like,
yeah, no, I agree with you now,
Anna. Yeah. The original question was, would we talk this much about it if we were just talking about Peter Pan? And I really don't think so, because
not us nowadays. Maybe if we were talking about doing a podcast at the Victorian England, maybe we would.
No, because I mean the original, even with the pirates and the more relevancy of piracy and all of that stuff, like the original was still about, it was still the cynical satire about adulthood and what it's like to be an adult and how adults take themselves too seriously and how children, not just that they don't want to grow up, but that they maintain something special almost against us. And that's great to talk about, all well and good, but by putting it in a war, they're not fighting against growing up. I mean, we certainly get the commentary about that in here, about how it was a magical time, it seems like we never aged, all those things get dropped, but they're not fighting against the same thing, because they're not even fighting against the war, they're trying to ignore it. And so it becomes not just a commentary on how silly it is to be an adult, but a commentary on how the things that we do are ruining their lives. These kids, I mean, it's not just that they were orphans and their thing got blew up, but like we see twice in 5 issues this fantasy wonderful life that they make for themselves. Like in the farmhouse, they could have raised each other and they could have grown up there and it would have been fine. You know, I mean, sure, eventually the war gone and they could have come, the people who owned the house would have come back, all that kind of stuff. But like, it's not just the commentary anymore of them fighting to grow up. It's the commentary of what war does to people and how terrible the war is, and how, as much as you might try to ignore that these people are fighting over things that these kids don't even like, there's nothing happening in this war that matters to these people.
Well, maybe it's not necessarily forcing them to grow up or literally age, but it's maybe the loss of innocence, you know?
Yeah, that's the thing. It's because he's put this story into this setting, all of those things that were in the original Peter Pan are in this now. And so everything that was in that original story we get here, but we also get this added layer from the setting of the war. And I just keep coming back to the fact that these kids have nothing to do with this. Aside from the fact that they live in France, like, none of them are, I mean, so far as we know, none of them are Jewish. That doesn't matter. None of them own land, so the Germans don't want land. None of them have resources. Nothing about what's going on. Not a single thing has any iota to do with these kids. But their lives are getting ruined repeatedly by this. And it's just like, growing up and becoming an adult doesn't ruin a child's life. It takes the childhood away from them, and growing up, as a natural consequence, you lose your innocence. And, I mean, there's all that stuff in the Peter Pan commentary, but it doesn't ruin their lives in such a traumatic way. And I think we get that commentary here because when we see Gilbert later and we see him talking about it, he's all whimsy this and that, but while he's telling the story, while he's doing the narrative, while we get him in text boxes, he's almost, like, sad and morose about it. I mean, he talks about it with this kind of nostalgia, but he says things like, I wondered about death, and if death would have been better than what we were doing.
And like, I think that's they're forced to, you know, they're forced to consider these things because of the war is taking something away from them.
Yeah.
I don't even know if I was trying to contradict you there.
No, you weren't. We're saying the same thing from different points.
Yeah.
But I really have to say, though, that the other thing that really makes this comic work, aside from setting and story, like taking the Peter Pan and putting it in World War II, that's genius and that's all well and good. But the other thing that makes this click so well for me is the art. Because like Jen mentioned, that look of Elaine's face in the window before the shell hits, and Gilbert's face is just looking back, is like, oh god. But aside from that, like, when you first get the introduction of the Lost Boys and their names, and you get a panel, god, the face work and the body language in those panels is great. Because you can see, like, that kid wants to go to a fight, those two are shy, that one is this, and this third kid is that. And it's like you know who these kids are without them saying anything more than their name. And that is amazing art. That's fucking great. And then it's consistently great throughout the entire thing. But like that page, that's like, okay, this is perfect. This artist is great for this story. Just done.
Yeah, everyone, I really like how the Lost Boys are sometimes hard to differentiate from each other because they are kind of like
all this French.
There's that, but there's like, they're kind of a monolithic idea. They represent a groupthink that operates like in tandem with Peter.
Yeah.
And he stands out, but then other times, like when it's needed, they stand out as their own characters with their own personalities. And like the artist just kind of flows between those two ways of drawing them so well. Like, they're just a group of boys when they need to be, and then they're individuals when they need to be.
Hell yeah.
Yes.
David, have you thought of a favorite scene yet? Art-wise.
Oh, I didn't realize you're still waiting for me to do that.
No, I wasn't, but usually when we come back around to art, we talk about, like, our favorite art parts.
Well, I have a favorite cover.
Okay, cool.
My favorite cover is, it's cover B for issue number one. It's the one with Peter and the P-51 Mustangs in the background.
Yeah.
I just thought that was a really cool cover. And what's neat about these covers is they're clearly inspired by propaganda posters.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really have anything profound to say about that. I just think it's really cool. You know, this Jenkins has some... Jenkins. Sorry.
I just heard it in my head that way again.
Yeah. He's just... I think he is a great artist. Like, the scene at the beginning of issue... what issue is this? Four or five? I think it's issue five. The one with Felix. It's a full page one of Felix running, firing the machine gun. Like, he's running back towards the Germans with the explosion behind him.
Yeah.
It's just a... That's a really nice... I think it's just a really well-drawn, powerful panel.
It's a good fuck yeah moment.
Well, not even, I mean, it is, but it's not like, it's not heroism. It's rage. You know, he's raging at the Germans. And I don't think it's necessarily a fuck yeah as much as a fuck you, you know? And I, you know, I was trying to be facetious there, but I'm not trying to diminish it. I really do think it's a very powerful emotional scene because he's so angry that he is running towards the danger. There's tears streaming down his face, you know. He's just he's so stricken with grief that it's turned into rage. Because he takes cover behind like a trough or whatever, and he's catching his breath, and this is on the next page, the fourth panel at the bottom. It seems like the rage subsides, and now he's just like sad. I don't know the okay. So I guess you know what I think. I figured out what my favorite scene is. It's this part.
All right. Because yeah, you're right. You do get to see him kind of like you see his immediate reaction. And then you see him actually experiencing the thought of what just happened. Like there's the gut reaction and then there's the brain reaction. And it's all in the art that you see it change and you see him transition from that gut reaction to the brain reaction. And it's done in a way that like you can see it so clearly and it hits you right where it matters.
Yeah, I mean the second page of issue 5 where you know, after the full page spread, there's no dialogue on that, but you can see the transformation. You know, he catches his breath, and it's like the reality of the situation hits him. You know, now he is not in a good spot because he's trapped there with the Germans and everything. So it's a powerful scene. I don't know. I can't think of a better way to describe it. It's really good.
Yep. So you guys got anything else to bring up before we rate this?
Not I.
Not nothing in particular.
Okay, then let's get down and rate this one. Who wants to go first? Jen.
I will give this a 4. It is clearly good, but it is also an expository trade, so it's not enough for me to see, like, big events and how they're going to pan out, so I can't do the 5. But I am interested in continuing reading this. I will acquire further issues and see where it goes, because I don't know, it's just such a charming story, and it takes Peter Pan and puts it in a war without being hokey, and that's quite the feat. So yes, I like this. It is a 4.
Well, I'm just gonna give it a 5, because what I said before I still believe, and that taking Peter Pan and putting it in a World War II setting like this is just genius. And when you do something genius, you deserve a 5. so,
fair enough.
I mean, it's like I want to keep reading, and every time that I see something that I recognize from the Peter Pan story as being taken from it, like Tinkerbell and Belle, not only do I get that, oh, awesome moment, but then I also get the how is this going to interact with the fact that they're in a war moment. Like, Tinkerbell was magical and powerful beyond reason compared to the other things. Like, compared to the Lost Boys, she was more powerful than magical. So how is that represented in this war? Is she then, like, fucking Rambo? Is that how it translates? Because that's also badass. Like, and then what is that commentary on her existence and the commentary that makes for the war and us and war as adults and all that kind of, like, it starts out as something really just, oh, hey, look at that, neat, and then trickles into something amazing. And it does it naturally in the flow of this comic, and that deserves a 5. Plus, the art's great, so I can't take anything off for that either, so 5. David?
All right, I'm going to be the odd person and give it a 4.5. I do think this is a great comic. It's different. Like I mentioned before, I think it's neat that Peter Pan is being used in this way. It's, you know, a lot of times we see, not just in comic books, but in other media, you know, retelling of classical stories. And I don't think this is a retelling of Peter Pan. I think it is a story about these kids using elements of Peter Pan. And I think that's why I like the way, you know, that I like that I was surprised when I finally got it, that this was Peter Pan. You know, there was, you know, that the main character is Peter Pan. You know, sometimes I see things like this, and when I realize that it's a retelling of the story, sometimes it's like, makes me, you know, you groan at it. You're like, oh God, this again. But this, I was like, oh my God, this is such a good story on its own that it never occurred to me that this wasn't an original. I can't even say it. I was going to say that this is an original idea, but this is an original idea. it's just taking something we're familiar with and using it in an awesome, creative way. I don't know why I'm not giving it a 5, so I'm changing my answer to 5.
Yeah, welcome to the dark side. I don't know if I would be the dark side.
it's a good comic. I thought the framed narrative was interesting here because, you know, I feel like the reason why Gilbert was a good choice as the first storyteller is because it forces us as readers to recognize Peter as a protagonist at the beginning, because I feel like we're definitely going to get a different point of view or points of view depending on how many different narrators there are. And if the narrator initially was had a negative view or a less positive view of Peter than Gilbert does, it would color our reading of the whole story. Now, this is complete speculation on my part because I have not read I haven't read past issue 5. But this trade was good enough that I'm going to, go buy the rest of it. So, you know, I'm definitely going to, I have no problems giving this a 5. I think and like we said, the art was great. And, you know, it's a little bit, it's not like photorealistic or it's kind of loose. And I think I mentioned this, I used the same description when we talked about Pretty Deadly, where the art really conveys motion well.
Mm-hmm.
The movement of the characters and stuff, so
especially with Peter's hair.
It's almost like anime hair. I don't know if I would call this a perfect comic, because I feel like if we're going to give it a 100% 5 out of 5 score, that kind of makes it sound like it's a perfect comic, but this is pretty damn good. You know, I definitely enjoyed this as much as I enjoyed Pretty Deadly, which I think all of us gave Pretty Deadly a 5, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think so.
But my experience reading Peter Panzerfaust was different than Pretty Deadly.
I think you and I are kind of giving this a 5 on faith in that we see the potential of the entire story of Peter Pan being put in this setting and all the different things that can happen, and knowing that if this is done to this quality, then the rest should hold up pretty well too.
I get where you're coming from, Jen, about, you know, this being expository, but it's almost not really a problem for me.
Okay.
I have a problem with exposition if it's like
I feel like the rest of the story carries it enough. Does that make sense? I don't know.
What was the one? For me, it's too much exposition if it's like Super God. That was like nothing but exposition.
Yeah.
Like that, I was like, this story's kind of neat, but that's really annoying, bro. Can I get some actual story here? Or are you just going to sit here and talk to your... you're going to just tape record the whole time. Got it. Okay, fine. But like, yeah, I think, Jen, You made the statement that I would usually make about frame narratives. This is why I don't usually like frame narratives, because it does get way... There's too much of a tendency for it to get way too expository. And, I don't know. I guess I just ignored it this time. Anyway, that's it for this week. Next week, we're going to read Chew by John Layman. Collects issues 1 to 5. I don't know what the name of it is. Taster's Choice. That's what it is. Taster's Choice. I'm really excited for this one because I've read like the first issue, because you know how like on Comixology and all that stuff, every once in a while they'll give you like the issue 1 for free, you know, like a crack dealer.
Give you a taste.
A taste. Oh, look at that.
It's Chew.
So I got issue 1 that way, and I was like, this is amazing, I can't wait to read more of this, and then I didn't, so I'm really excited. I bought after I read that first issue, I went out and I bought the first 2 trade paperbacks, so I have them sitting over there at the shelf, and they've been there for a year and a half now at least, so I'm really excited to actually read them. That's next week. But if you want to find out what we have coming up after our Image series, go to our website at www.apsupercast.com. And if you have a suggestion for what we should read, now this is episode 182 we're on, and there's only a couple more to issue 200. So if you have a suggestion, let us know, and maybe we can build a whole series around it leading up to or after that 200th episode special that's going to have things that we haven't announced yet, but we will announce soon, probably. I don't know. We'll figure it out. Send us an email at
atomicpoweredsupercast@gmail.com.
I almost forgot that I was leading up to the email. As always, there's the social media stuff. Twitter.com/APSupercast, Facebook.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
All right, everybody. Until next week. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Yes.